Orson Welles speaking. I broke a promise on the last broadcast. The Jazz crowded out the fairy story. We'll have the fairy story today, after a little gossip and a couple of rumors about this fantastic world of reality. We'll get to that in just a minute.
The name Men Fly By. That's the way people who know refer to Lear Incorporated, the sponsors of this program. For Lear has been famous for more than 15 years for the fine aircraft radios they make. Radios that are flying the airways from coast to coast and from Alaska to the tip of South America. You know well how dependable, how up to the minute, how sensitive and fine such radios have to be. And that's the kind of radio making that Lear understands and does superlatively well. The Lear home radios, which you'll be seeing soon, share this kind of expert manufacture. They'll be unusually fine radios. They'll be equipped to bring you the very latest developments in entertainment. Just to mention one, there's the Lear wire recorder, the wire that remembers. With this, you can record everything you wish, even radio programs, right from the air. A whole hour or more of entertainment goes on a single spool, ready to be played and replayed to your heart's content. On the other hand, whatever you don't want anymore disappears from the wire the moment you record something else on top of it. Now, that's the kind of development you'll see and hear in Lear radios. So be on the watch for the radios with the name Lear. L-E-A-R. Now, Mr. Welles brings you his views and opinions on events as he sees them. The opinions are his own and do not necessarily represent the views of Lear Incorporated.
If you liked our broadcast of and about jazz last week, you should have heard my musician friends when they really warmed up after we got off the air and had breakfast. It's early out here on the coast, early anywhere for a jam session, but we had one out on the terrace to the amazement and edification of the neighborhood. Zudy Singleton, the drummer, the world's greatest drummer, I should say, had planned to say a few words on the show, but it was too early for that entirely. "Man," said Zudy, "my diction is beat this morning. Come television, I'll give you a look at the gentleman who gave his name to the American language, the original Zudy of the exclamation Zoot, and of Zoot Suits. He's, by the way, neither an exclamatory personality nor what even Sumner Welles would describe as a snappy dresser. Well, it's much quieter around here today, and the atmosphere is more conducive to fairy tales. Of course, we can't neglect the news altogether. As a matter of fact, the news itself is beginning to look a little like a great big fairy story without a happy ending. When the rumor was launched that Clement Attlee was proposing a whirlpooling of scientific knowledge to control the atom, the most surprised man I hear in Great Britain was Winston Churchill, who up to now, as you know, has dominated the foreign policy of the government he no longer heads. Just recently, Winnie made this private crack. Attlee is a sheep in sheep's clothing. Well, last week, Mr. Attlee came to call at the White House for a chat about the atom. The published decisions of the Prime Minister and the President, in my opinion, make a mockery of the San Francisco Conference and knock the last real prop from under the prematurely rickety United Nations organization. I have it on excellent authority that there are certain men around Truman who feel we should attack and devastate Russia before Russia has time to develop the atom bomb. Doubtful that America can actually fire the first shot, these men hope for some incident that might make it possible for the Soviet Union to be accused of aggression. I have reason to fear that Admiral Leahy is among those who feel that war with Russia is inevitable and therefore desirable now. The admiral, who has more combined military and diplomatic experience than any other man in Washington, is said to have even greater influence over Truman today than he used to have over Roosevelt. Those who want war with Russia and want it now are saying that Soviet moral prestige in Europe is at a low ebb, that for the moment Russia is a hollow shell militarily and no match for us until Soviet scientists manage to build their version of the atomic infernal machine. All this may sound pretty wild, but these are wild times, and there are some desperate men in Washington today. According to a current joke, Stalin made two mistakes, showing the Red Army to Central Europe and showing Central Europe to the Red Army. One more item, and our joke department will close up for the day. The latest rumor is that Harry Truman is grooming himself for a new job. It isn't a second term he's after, nor is it the presidency of the United Nations organization, that higher office they used to link with Franklin Roosevelt's name. No, it's being hinted in Washington that Harry Truman is grooming himself to run for governor of Missouri in 1948. Well, where I'm sitting, it's a fine sunny day. Every prospect pleases, and even man in this whiny Hollywood weather is not so vile. Below this microphone is a swimming pool, and beyond are the swimming pools of neighbors. It's all very sumptuous in a cozy sort of way, and I don't mind telling you I'm ashamed of it. Next door to me, On the charred continent of Europe, men and women and children are starving to death. Next door to me in tragic Asia, British troops, armed in part by American land lease, are fighting Indonesian patriots who are fighting for a thing known in the English language as freedom. We fought for it ourselves, and so have the British. But the British at this moment are fighting for their empire. And they fought for that before, and fought for it here, as I can't help remembering, when America was a part of that empire, in 1778, when we were on the Indonesian side of that old argument. Like the man says, when you get rich, you forget what it was like to be poor. Our own government, which maintained to the huge advantage of the dictator Franco and the fascist world conspiracy the strictest neutrality in the Spanish Civil War, is very openly and very definitely taking sides in the civil war now raging in China. I think we'd better change the subject. I think we'd better have the fairy story now. Probably you've heard the one I'm going to read you. I hope so, because a fairy tale gets better as you know it better. This one is called, very beautifully, Briar Rose. A long time ago, there was a king and a queen who said every day, "Ah, if we only could have a child," but they never had one. It happened that once when the queen was bathing, a frog crept out of the water onto the land and said to her, "Your wish shall be fulfilled. Before a year has gone by, you shall have a daughter." What the frog said came true, and the queen had a little girl who was so pretty that the king could not contain himself for joy and ordered a great feast. He invited not only his kindred, friends, and acquaintances, but also the wise women in order that they might be kind and well-disposed towards the child. There were 13 of these wise women in his kingdom, but as he had only 12 golden plates for them to eat out of, one of them had to be left at home. The feast came to an end, and the wise women bestowed their magic gifts upon the baby. One gave virtue, another beauty, a third riches, and so on with everything in the world that one can wish for. When 11 of them had made their promises, suddenly the 13th wise woman came in. She wished to avenge herself for not having been invited, and without greeting or even looking at anyone, she cried with a loud voice, "The king's daughter shall, in her 15th year, prick herself with a spindle and fall down dead." And without saying a word more, she turned round and left the room. They were all shocked, but the 12th wise woman, whose good wish still remained unspoken, came forward, and as she could not undo the evil sentence, but only soften it, she said, "It shall not be death, but a deep sleep of 100 years, into which the princess shall fall." The king, who would fain keep his dear child from the misfortune, gave orders that every spindle in the whole kingdom should be burnt. And meanwhile, the gifts of the wise women were plenteously fulfilled on the young girl, for she was so beautiful, modest, good-natured, and wise that everyone who saw her was bound to love her. It happened that on the very day when she was 15 years old, the king and queen were not at home, and the maiden was left in the palace quite alone. She went round into all sorts of places, looking into rooms and bedchambers just as she liked, and at last came to an old tower. She climbed up the narrow, winding staircase and reached a little door. A rusty key was in the lock, and when she turned it, the door sprang open, and there sat an old woman with a spindle, busily spinning her flax. "Good day, old mother," said the king's daughter. "What are you doing there?" "I am spinning," said the old woman, and nodded her head. "What sort of thing is that that rattles round so merrily?" said the girl, and she took the spindle and wanted to spin too. But scarcely had she touched the spindle when the magic decree was fulfilled, and she pricked her finger with it. And in the very moment when she felt the prick, she fell down upon the bed and lay in a deep sleep. And this sleep extended over the whole palace. The king and queen, who had just come home and had entered the great hall, began to go to sleep, and the whole of the court with them. The horses, too, went to sleep in the stable, the dogs in the yard, the pigeons upon the roof, the flies on the wall. Even the fire that was flaming on the hearth became quiet and slept. The roast meat left off frizzling, and the cook, who was just going to pull the hair of the scullery boy because he had forgotten something, let him go and went to sleep. And the wind fell, and on the trees before the castle, not a leaf moved again. But round about the castle there began to grow a hedge of thorns, which every year became higher, and at last grew close up round the castle and all over it,
so that there was nothing of it to be seen, not even the flag upon the roof. And after long, long years, a king's son came again to that country and heard an old man talking about the thorn hedge, and that a castle was said to stand behind it, in which a wonderfully beautiful princess named Briar Rose had been asleep for 100 years, and that the king and queen and the whole court were asleep likewise. He had heard, too, from his grandfather that many king's sons had already come and had tried to get through the thorny hedge, but they had remained sticking fast in it and had died a pitiful death. Then the youth said, "I am not afraid. I will go and see the beautiful Briar Rose." By this time, the 100 years had just passed, and the day had come when Briar Rose was to wake again. And when the king's son came near to the thorn hedge, it was nothing but large and beautiful flowers, which parted from each other of their own accord and let him pass unhurt. And they closed again behind him like a hedge. In the castle yard, he saw the horses and the spotted hounds lying asleep. On the roof sat the pigeons with their heads under their wings. And when he entered the house, the flies were asleep upon the wall. The cook in the kitchen was still holding out his hand to seize the boy. And the maid was sitting by the black hen, which he was going to pluck. He went on farther, and in the great hall he saw the whole of the court lying asleep, and by the throne lay the king and queen. Then he went on still farther, and all was so quiet that a breath could be heard. And at last he came to the tower and opened the door into the little room where Briar Rose was sleeping. And there she lay, so beautiful that he could not turn his eyes away from her. And he stooped down and gave her a kiss. But as soon as he kissed her, Briar Rose opened her eyes and awoke and looked at him quite sweetly. Then they went down together, and the king awoke, and the queen, and the whole court, and looked at each other in great astonishment. And the horses in the courtyard stood up and shook themselves. The hounds jumped up and wagged their tails. The pigeons upon the roof pulled out their heads from under their wings and looked around and flew into the open country. The flies on the wall crept again. The fire in the kitchen burned up and flickered and cooked the meat. The joint began to turn and sizzle again. And the cook gave the boy such a box on the ear that he screamed. And the maid finished plucking the fowl. And then the marriage of the king's son with Briar Rose was celebrated with all splendor, and they lived contented to the end of their days. And that's the end of the fairy tale. And now your attention, please, for an interesting announcement.
You'll probably notice that when I say Lear Home Radios, I emphasize the word home. Well, that's to distinguish these particular radios from the famous aircraft radios that Lear has been making since way back in 1930. And it's also to point out that all the outstanding skill and craftsmanship that have gone into these radios for airplanes are now shared in Lear radios that you'll have for your homes. You'll find Lear home radios are handsome, fine-looking pieces of furniture. They're complete with the latest advances the radio world offers. Some of them will have television, some an entirely new contribution to convenience and tuning. Some, the Lear wire recorder I told you about before. And there'll be FM and worldwide shortwave. About the prices? Ah, there's the surprise. Lear radios, with all their background and fine manufacture, will not be high-priced. A beautiful console combination with every feature, including television, runs about $500. And a trim, capable table model sells at the $19.95 level. But no matter what you pay for a Lear radio, one thing is certain. When you see it and hear it, you'll agree that you get the most for your investment in a radio made by Lear, L-E-A-R. And now a final word from Orson Welles.
Well, it isn't too early to begin thinking about Christmas, and may I suggest that you order from Pantheon Books or from your bookstore the truly great new edition of Grimm's Fairy Tales, illustrated by Joseph Cherel, and from which I read you the story of Briar Rose. After you've looked at that book, I think you'll probably want to keep it, so you'd better get two books right off the bat, the second for the best friend you have in the world, preferably an adult. If he doesn't like it, he doesn't deserve your friendship, or if it's a she and she thinks the Grimm brothers wrote only for children, she'll change your mind, or you'll change your mind about her.
This is the American Broadcasting Company.